Today, more than ever, Americans need a means to protect their life savings. With a troubled economy and government spending out of control, they've been forced to promote loose money policies, which decreases the value of the dollar and promotes inflation. Birch Gold Group can help you protect your savings by rolling over all or a portion of your IRA or 401k into an IRA backed by physical gold. Take advantage of the best gold prices in years and enjoy the long-term hedge against inflation that gold provides by moving into a gold IRA from Birch Gold Group, the precious metal IRA specialists. Call Birch Gold Group today for a free consultation on how a tax-free rollover to a gold IRA can offer stability, protection, and the peace of mind that your life savings, which you've worked so hard to build, is safe. Call 888-999-1351 and receive Birch Gold's free information kit, which offers the best-kept secrets for safeguarding your savings with gold. Call 888-999-1351. That's 888-999-1351.
Welcome to Wagner and Winnick on the Law. For the next hour, Monterey College of Law's Dean Mitchell Winnick and law professor Stephen Wagner will discuss current legal events and public policy issues that are affecting our daily lives. They will not provide individual legal advice. If you have a specific legal problem, you're encouraged to contact a lawyer for legal assistance. If you do not have a lawyer, contact the local bar association or lawyer referral service in your community for recommendations. And now, it's Wagner and Winnick on the Law.
Good afternoon. This is Mitch Winnick welcoming you to Wagner and Winnick on the Law. I am joined today by my co-host, Stephen Wagner. Stephen, welcome.
Welcome, Mitch. Glad to be joining you.
And we are delighted to have here today our special guest co-host. We're gonna change the title here. He's really a guest today. Michael Cohen, our constitutional law professor and an attorney with Shepard Mullin. But we are very excited to announce that starting in May, Michael's going to be a regular contributor to our show. Stephen, won't that be great?
It's outstanding, Michael. Great big welcome to you, and especially today because we're going to take on U.S. Supreme Court cases, and we need your wisdom today.
Well, thanks, Stephen.
No pressure.
I can't promise wisdom, but I can promise present sense impressions.
Well, that's a very judicial answer. Yeah, very cautious and
maybe
judicial.
Even couple of excited utterances.
Yeah, I figured I'd speak Stephen's evidentiary language.
It makes his day when you guys do that. It's like law professor porn, you know? It just fits. You know it when you see it, right?
All right, I'll be marking all those terms of art and terms of art and buzzwords along the way.
Yeah, you notice the dean of our law school uses the legal terminology porn.
Well, we're talking about the Supreme Court. It's been addressed by the Supreme Court a number of times. I mean, this is all part of our free speech and great constitutional rights.
Absolutely, and this is a term for free speech and constitutional rights. Mitch, like no term, it hasn't disappointed.
Well, let's start today by talking a little in general about the Supreme Court. Those of us who practice law and teach law just take it for granted that people know how the Supreme Court works. And I know we've talked about this a number of times before, but I think it's always great to just step back for a moment and talk about it. So walk us through. There's about 7,000 requests that come to the Supreme Court each year. About 80 cases are heard, about 50 of them are decided. But where do these cases come from?
They come from all walks of life. I mean, I think the Supreme Court is part of the constitutional structure of our government. It's one of our three branches, and it's an institution. And although it's a judicial institution, it is a political institution as well. And one place Supreme Court cases come from is interest groups that find cases to push the law around constitutional issues from ranging from First Amendment rights to evidentiary rights to death penalty rights to contraception rights, privacy rights, etc. Where the cases really come from is the human dynamic, the human experience in our country. Ranging from all of the federal laws that apply across the board, from securities to antitrust to labor, to constitutional rights, which we all hold dear, to our heart and dear to our freedoms.
And so they can't just call up the Supreme Court, send them a note, send them a piece of paper and say, we want you to decide this. It has to percolate up the system.
It has to percolate up through a system. And those there are two systems, Mitch, by which cases percolate to the Supreme Court. The first system, critically important to our structure of government, is the state court system.
So it can actually come. We have parallel systems, and a lot of people don't realize this. I actually give tours to out-of-country officers from the Naval Postgraduate School, and they always want to know a little about the American legal system. And there are not a lot of systems around the world that have such a completely parallel system, where there's the state law that percolates up. There's courts of original jurisdiction to appellate courts, there's the Supreme Courts in each state. And then a completely separate set of courts of original jurisdiction to appellate courts to the Supreme Court that are federal law.
Absolutely right. And federal courts also hear cases that are more state-type cases where there is diversity of citizenship, either between states or between a state and a foreign nation, and certain jurisdictional thresholds are met. So the federal courts can bring to the Supreme Court both federal law cases as well as constitutional cases that arise from state sets of facts.
So if one of these interest groups that want to bring one of the issues you discussed want to get a case to the Supreme Court because they think it's time for something to be resolved, and most likely it's because they haven't got what they want from the state or federal legislatures, because they could have gone that route and get a law passed, or if they don't like the law that's passed and they think it's unconstitutional, they want to have it heard through the court system.
Right.
So they have to file a case, and it has to make its way up through the appellate division. There has to be a question of law, not a question of fact. It either gets to the Supreme Court of the state, and then there's certain cases that can then come to the Supreme Court of the United States, or they've gotten it up to an appellate court in the federal system. And frequently there's the Supreme Court looks for cases, right, where there's because there's a lot of federal courts. I don't know, 100. Stephen, how many federal courts? We're going to put you on the spot here.
I'm not sure.
I have no idea.
I can't give you an exact amount of
the, there's a couple hundred, I think. 150, something like that.
Some people you'd ask and they'd say too many, and others others would say way too few. There's no good answer to that question.
But the reality is you have to get up to there, and then frequently if there's conflict between two federal courts, that's the easiest way to get the Supreme Court involved, because their job is to be the tiebreaker. So it is a lengthy process. And I went through all that, and I appreciate everybody kind of wading through it, because we sometimes wonder why issues take so long. It seems like this urgent issue. Why are we hearing a case such as the University of Texas case on affirmative action that started 7 years ago?
7 years ago, making its way up and recently argued for a second time.
Right.
Having been through all of the process that you mentioned, Mitch, reaching the Supreme Court, being remanded back to the Circuit Court of Appeals, having a decision rendered again and then being appealed yet again.
Michael, yeah. Mitch, let me jump in on one issue. I know we're coming up on a break, and we're going to get into the content of the cases that are now before the Supreme Court. But before we do it, I think our listeners should learn a little bit about the number of justices in the scenario we're in now because of the passing of Justice Scalia.
Sure.
And the impact of there now being a lot more riding upon a so-called 4-4 vote, because I think that means that the intermediate court or the appellate court decision would stand in certain instances. Is that right, Michael?
That's exactly right, Stephen. In the event of a deadlock, which is a 4-4 tie on the Supreme Court, the decision being appealed from is affirmed by what's called a per curiam order. That is a critical fact in the current situation.
In fact, we had one happen this past week.
We've had a deadlock the past week and a per curiam order in a very significant case, and we are likely to be headed that way in a couple more.
Well, that we are going to, after break, get into each of those cases. The last thing I want to just talk about as we talk about how a case gets there, you know, I said there's 7,000 or more requests a year. I mean, that's kind of astounding when you think about it. How do the justices decide which of those 7,000 they're going to hear? So they're only going to take about 80 to a, well, another 50 they might just decide on written opinion. But that's not very many out of 7,000. How do they pick?
No, they vote.
Yeah.
They vote. And there is a bit of what you would call judicial lobbying that goes on in that process, not necessarily in the political sense, but in the judicial sense of, do I have the votes? Do I have the votes? And a lot of the cases in the current term, Mitch, are there because folks thought they had the votes with Justice Scalia.
Aha. And so they thought it was a ripe time to bring this issue up because they thought they so these interest groups you talk about keep a keen eye on how they think the balance of the court will come down on an issue. And they can decide somewhat which year they want to push to have a given case come up before the court.
That's right. Generally speaking, four justices have to vote to grant certiorari to a case, which is a permission to hear the case. And usually you don't do that if you don't have the votes.
Well, we're going to take a brief break. You're listening to Wagner and Winnick on the Law. You can hear us on biztalkradio.com. Don't go away. When we come back, we're going to talk about these specific cases that are coming before the Supreme Court.
Deciding to go to law school brings up questions like, can I afford it? Will I be prepared to take the leap and open my own office when I graduate? I'm Wendy Law Revere, Dean of Admissions at Monterey College of Law. Have you ever dreamed of being a lawyer? We at Monterey College of Law can help make that dream come true with professors who are practicing attorneys and judges. They mentor our graduates. But don't take it from me. Hear what recent graduate Creighton Mandeville says.
I wasn't crippled in debt coming out of Monterey College of Law. I came out of it with no debt. I was able to do some working during that time and some savings, so I exited law school with no debt. I did feel prepared coming out of law school. I started helping friends with the issues that came up for them, and Monterey College of Law has so many great faculties and things that there were resources for me.
There's never been a better time to become a lawyer. Call us today at 582-4000. That's 582-4000. Or visit us online at montereylaw.edu. That's montereylaw.edu. Applying to Monterey College of Law is not hard, and we have a financial plan and class schedule that is tailored to meet your needs. I'm Wendy Law Revere, Dean of Admissions at Monterey College of Law. Have you ever dreamed of being a lawyer? We at Monterey College of Law can help make that dream come true without crippling you with debt on graduation day.
I chose Monterey College of Law because I wanted to continue working during the day. I had children at home, and I wanted to be able to go to school at night where it wouldn't impact what my children needed from me.
There really is not crippling debt that you face afterwards. Monterey College of Law has a payment plan which is manageable, and they work with you. The other huge benefit of Monterey College of Law is that the professors are judges and lawyers. By taking their classes, you really actually start networking. So I was very fortunate because I also ended up with a mentor.
There's never been a better time to become a lawyer. Call us today at 582-4000 or visit us online at montereylaw.edu.
There's more than one way to invest in your education. Investing in the right products, securities, and real estate generates secure and sound futures. What about an investment that retains its value? Consider college real estate. College Real Estate can provide housing for students and generate returns for their families. Through this special offer from Austin iLabs, you can download the free workbook from collegerealestate.com to see if this investment is right for you. Go to collegerealestate.com/radio.
Has your life changed? Are you now in a situation where you need health insurance? Here's some simple advice. Call our health insurance hotline right now. This free service will do all the work for you. Shop the health insurance marketplace and find the plan that best meets your health insurance needs. Don't get lost searching for plans on your own. Let a licensed agent help you for free. According to a report on CNN Money, almost half of those eligible for subsidies are paying less than $3 a day for bronze or silver plans. Remember, under Obamacare, most Americans qualify for health insurance. So get ready to let us do all the work for you and find out the best health insurance plan for your needs. Call this number now.
800-659-7975. 800-659-7975 for your free health insurance quote. Call now, 800-659-7975, 800-659-7975.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas.
Get your free inventor's information. Call 1-800-352-3719. That's 1-800-352-3719.
Biz Talk Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Wagner and Winnick on the Law. This is Dean Mitchell Winnick, and I welcome you with my co-host, law professor Stephen Wagner, and our guest today, constitutional law professor and attorney at Shepard Mullin, Michael Cohen. Today we're going to talk about the Supreme Court. It's been a busy week already. There's been a lot of discussion, as we have had over the past several weeks, about Supreme Court nominee Merrick Garland and the process of selecting a justice. But right now, today, we're talking about what happens in the interim when you have eight justices of the Supreme Court.
Mitch, Michael, can I jump in and try to redeem myself? You tried to gaslight me, Mitch.
I knew you wouldn't know. I sure did.
Well, no, but I will confess, I hurried to my laptop.
Yes.
You know, I'm off campus. I'm participating by phone today. And there are 94 district courts.
Ah, okay, 94 federal district courts.
And when you asked me, I have to say, I was thinking about pushing it back to you and asking you whether there were more federal courts than U.S. senators.
You would have nailed me on that one.
But I'm over it now.
Okay. Good.
Thank you, Michael.
Absolutely. I loved that, Stephen.
So let's start with the scenario that we were all talking about when Justice Scalia died, that we now have eight justices on the Supreme Court. They have a full term with a number of very large, what we would call blockbuster cases coming up. And the question was, what happens? And so, Michael, we just this past week, we get the first of those cases that came through. It was a union case that, in simple terms, it's not the first time the court has dealt with a similar issue to this. But the question was, could union members be required to pay dues when they disagreed, I'm going to oversimplify it, but when they disagreed with some of the political activities of the union? So they felt that it was violating, kind of a reverse violating their free speech. It was making them pay for speech that they didn't agree with.
Exactly. Compelled speech or compelled
association. Is it non-union? Is it the non-union employees that are forced to contribute?
That's right, Stephen. It's called a fair share rule. It's existed since 1977 when it was first upheld by the Supreme Court. And it basically says that non-union employees who opt out of a union in a field where there is a collective bargaining agreement, they don't have to pay certain dues, but they do have to pay their fair share of dues for the benefits they receive.
And so unions do a broad range of things, from negotiating for health benefits, for wages, for work circumstances, and they have some political activities as well.
Absolutely. And in California, in the teachers union, there are about 9,000 of the 375,000 teachers in the state, which, again, indicates what a massive economy California is. Right. Did not want their speech compelled. They did not want to pay for the type of speech or association that they objected to for whatever reason. What's fascinating about the case that you set up, Mitch, is this is a case that the Supreme Court upheld the fair share rule in 77 and invited this review of this rule through a series of recent cases where it had been chipping away at it, largely because it was expected this term that there would be five votes were going to overturn the fair share rule. And
they would assume that the fifth in this case would have been Justice Scalia.
Justice Antonin Scalia, and it is exactly the way that broke down. Justice Antonin Scalia was the fifth vote. He was not there to cast it because of his sad passing. And the court came out 4-4, and we are left with a standing fair share rule. What's very interesting about it is we're left with it in an election year. And this is an election issue, folks.
Oh, yeah.
When you're talking about unions, you are talking about election issues.
And we're talking about major monetary contributions, potentially.
That's right, Stephen. And so now we have a deadlock, and the deadlock issue itself is a political issue in this election year. And we have a deadlock on a political issue of union speech, and it will likely play out and galvanize a lot of union activity gearing up to this November election, because to these unions, this issue matters.
And so it brings up a couple of other issues. One is that the issues like this do come back to the court. So one might surmise that this isn't the last time we've heard this, because depending on who gets appointed, depending on how these interested parties decide to strategize working another case like this up through the system, they may choose to bring it back again.
Right. And can you imagine the confirmation hearings on the 4-4 deadlocks? I mean, whoever the appointee is going to have to answer the question how they would vote on the deadlock cases.
Well, and we know that they're allowed to talk about past cases,
right?
Because that's a historical nature. They're just not allowed to discuss anything that's a pending or future case.
Absolutely right.
So that becomes a kind of a tightrope that they have to walk on things.
So
like
this
that.
Is Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association, right?
That's right, Stephen.
And this one is truly hot off the press. I decided a few days ago.
That's right. The case was decided in a deadlock per curiam order on March 29th.
So, Stephen, what happened is exactly what you and I were talking about just a couple weeks ago. Here we have the first of the 4-4 cases that have been talked about. And people said, well, what happens? Well, what happens is the appellate decision stands. And in this case, it stood in favor of the unions.
Yeah. So, Michael, there's really a way, I think, that you could almost accurately predict outcomes now with the absence of Justice Scalia?
Well, it kind of depends. We're going to see that, I think, on some of these other cases, right? So the question comes where some of the other justices might fall. For example, let's go into that. We have time. Let's move into the issue of abortion. Again, it's been at the court before. There's been discussion when it would come again. It is there, and they did an interesting thing. The justices can take one case, or they can actually bundle a set of similar cases if they want to use those to craft their review. Is that a fair way to say it, Michael?
I think that's a really fair way to say it, sure.
And so they've got two cases. What this is, Women's Whole Health versus Hellerstedt and Zubik versus Burwell. Are those two that are up? And that one of them, let's talk about the one in the Texas case.
Sure.
So the Texas case was state law that essentially established a set of technical requirements in order for a clinic to continue to open and serve. So that in and of itself cast as a protection of women's health. So I think if I remember correctly, they required under state law that in this case, for a women's health clinic, whether they did abortions or not, but for a women's health clinic, the physicians on staff had to have privileges of a certain type at a certain hospital. And this meant in rural Texas, where they could not have those privileges, those clinics were then forced by state law to close.
Yeah, it was actually a combination of two things that are worth mentioning, Mitch. It was the admitting privilege issue that you mentioned, but also a requirement that the centers follow ambulatory guidelines.
Okay, so we're going to pick this up right after this break. Don't go away. You're listening to Wagner and Winnick on the Law.
Did you ever look at the stains in your coffee cup and then realize that's exactly what happens to your teeth? Power Swabs is the 5-minute solution to get your teeth white without visiting the dentist. This is Ben Gordon with Power Swabs, and if your teeth are stained from coffee, tea, or smoking, all it takes is 5 minutes with Power Swabs. In 5 minutes, you'll see an average of 2 shades whiter teeth, and in 7 days, 6 shades. It's clinically proven to whiten natural teeth as well as caps and veneers. The secret is a tooth detergent that was developed by Dr. Martin Ginniger that lifts stains off of your teeth. Best of all, there's no messy strips or trays that you have to leave in your mouth for an hour. Just swab your teeth for 5 minutes and you're done. To try Power Swabs risk-free, call 1-800-906-2573. That's 1-800-906-2573. I guarantee your bright white smile will have your friends talking about how great you look. Try it risk-free today. 1-800-906-2573. It's 1-800-906-2573.
I'm Dr. Harry Anderson.
And I'm Penny Gilley.
I've been helping you with your nutritional needs for over 44 years. Now I want to introduce you to my wellness formula for yourself that will help you have more energy, alertness, and focus.
Plus, it's all natural. Try Total People Plus today and see for yourself. Go to PennyGilley.com. Learn, relax, focus, excel. Total People Plus.
Let 2016 be the year you take care of yourself. All natural, caffeine and gluten-free, $35 for 180 capsules. Recommending 4 per day will last 6 weeks. For a limited time, get free shipping by mentioning promo code PENNY. To order, call 817-470-4653 or go to PennyGilley.com. That's 817-470-4653 or PennyGilley.com. Order today.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-658-3876. That's 800-658-3876. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-658-3876.
Are you worried about losing your home to foreclosure? If you've been threatened with foreclosure or receive legal papers from your bank, you have approximately 30 days to respond. If you do not respond, you could lose your home. You have rights. Act now to protect your rights. You can stay in your home. Many times you can even modify your loan. The bottom line is you can get past this, but you must act right now. If you've been served by your bank and you're worried about losing your home to foreclosure, now is the time to fight back and save your home. Time is limited, so call the professional at National Foreclosure Defense right now.
800-708-7922. 800-708-7922. 800-708-7922. 800-708-7922. That number again is 800-708-7922.
I've owned my company for 14 years now, and I can tell you that payroll is a four-letter word. I hate doing it. It eats up hours I don't have, and it costs me money I could be saving, but my accountant's too expensive, and I'm not sure who to call. But I know I need help.
We're Paychex, and we take all the hassles out of small business payroll. We save you time and money. It's easy. Call, fax, or give us your payroll information securely online, and we take care of the rest. We calculate the correct taxes, manage payments and direct deposits. We even send out your checks. Payroll doesn't need to be a four-letter word anymore. We're so sure that we can save you time and money that we'll give you a month's payroll free. Just for calling 877-726-3369. Get 1 month's payroll for free. Call Paychex right now. 877-726-3369. That's 877-726-3369.
Biz Talk Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Wagner and Winnick on the Law. This is Law Dean Mitchell Winnick of Monterey College of Law. I'm San Luis Obispo College of Law. I have with me on air today my co-host, law professor Stephen Wagner, also a trial attorney with the Adamski firm in San Luis Obispo. And our special contributor today is Michael Cohen, who's a law professor at Monterey College of Law and is also an international lawyer and trial attorney with the firm Shepard Mullin. But today, we are talking about constitutional law and the very first of the 4-4 decisions that we've been talking about with only 8 members of the Supreme Court. So we just began talking about the issue of the Texas abortion clinics. And Stephen, I don't think it's out of line for us to say that abortion did come back into the news this week from the political side.
Yes, indeed.
And I throw that to you as the district attorney on the show here. There was a discussion by a certain candidate for president that, you know, if it becomes a criminal law, there should be prosecution, correct?
That's going to be a potential polarizing issue for sure.
I knew you didn't want to go deep into that one, but I couldn't resist, right? Anyway, but that's true. But it does bring it right back into the dialogue. And so not only did it spend the entire week in the political dialogue, we now have it coming up for the court. So, Michael, talk to us a little about the Texas abortion case and what were the issues there and how do you think that's going to fare now before a 4-4 court?
Yeah, sure. So it's fascinating that Texas passed a law that, as we said before the break, did two things. One, it required, and it was targeted to abortion clinics, it required abortion clinics to have an ambulatory license and, in essence, have facilities that mirrored surgery facilities at a hospital.
So they raised the technical requirements of the medical procedures. And the argument on the other side was that wasn't necessary. It was an artificial
argument
change.
On the other side is it's a less intrusive procedure than a colonoscopy, and you don't do that for colonoscopy.
Is that the spirit of the argument that the restrictions were artificially imposed so as to force visits to certain hospitals?
Michael, because one of the other arguments is, and Stephen raises a good point, it was the women's right to have access, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's and Stephen, it's not so much forcing them into hospitals. I think that the opponents to the law feel the law was designed to close clinics.
Right.
And in fact, it closed. Texas had 41 clinics, and now it has 19.
Sure. Okay. That was the means of establishing the impact.
And if this law goes through, it's going to go down to 10 or
to
even
10.
Fewer.
And you know, the plaintiff in this case, drove 300 miles each way for a procedure that lasted less than 4 minutes.
So the presumption was that this was going to be a 5-4 decision before the current court. What do you think is going to happen now?
It's a really interesting case. There will be 4 justices solidly against the law: Justice Breyer and the 3 female Supreme Court justices.
Okay, so there's 4 that are going to say this law should be overturned.
Absolutely, there will be 3, and this all falls into Stephen's accurate prediction analysis, but I call it wild guess that sometimes is right. there'll be 3 justices who are solidly for upholding the law, and the justice that will be the swing vote in this case is Justice Kennedy. And, you know, it'll either be a 5-3 decision overturning the Texas law, which has been mimicked in about 16 states.
So it's not just Texas.
No, it's not. In some form, it's been mimicked in about 16 states. Or it will be a 4-4 per curiam, and the Texas statute as it stands will hold. Not by an affirmance, but by a per curiam affirmance, by a deadlock.
Deadlock upholds the appellate decision, which had already upheld the state law.
True. And Mitch, this case, this particular case, the Texas abortion clinic case, this is one of the hottest cases on the term this year. This is one of the most visible, highest profile cases on the term. Involves the constitutional right, however you may agree or disagree with it. It involves a constitutional right and whether or not this limits the access to that right, and it's a big one.
So let me ask another quick question, I was always a little confused about this. Let's assume we go back and Merrick Garland is approved, and so now we have a full 9-member complement of the Supreme Court. They heard oral argument on this case. They haven't decided yet. Does the court also have the option to rehear now that they have a ninth court member?
They do, and have in these circumstances. They absolutely do, and have in the past. And you know, it's an interesting. We have people who follow our show apparently by text as well, and have access to our numbers. And earlier in the show, I mentioned or characterized Justice Scalia's passing as sad, Mitch, because I kind of feel that way about anybody who dies.
Right, of course.
But I instantly got a text from a very irate scholar saying, Scalia's passing is sad. Are you kidding?
Well, that goes back to the point that there is politics.
It just goes to show you the court is
illegal.
Absolutely.
Community.
The court is a political institution. And it's a valid comment. These are lifetime appointments. And justices rarely retire. Death or near death is usually the only thing that removes, although they are impeachable, the only thing that really removes justice from the court. And Scalia was, for all of his. For all of the wonderful things that have been said about him, there are just as many negative things. He was a real lightning rod on the court, and a very vocal member of the court, and a very influential justice on the court.
Michael, are you able to compare this scenario with Justice Scalia's passing to the passing of Justice Rehnquist? In terms of how it jolted the court and how it impacted. I mean, it seems like it's the passing of Scalia has raised more controversial issues potentially.
It has, Stephen. You're very right, and it has because the court is much more closely divided right now. The politics are heightened. The decisions are ones where the division is not just jurisprudential, but real. Division on moral fabric underlying rights and issues. Justice Scalia was one of those justices, whether you agreed with his politics or his judicial philosophy or not, who could write persuasive opinions. He was a master of logic and a great manipulator of logic in many ways. Thus, the gift and the lightning rod, if you will.
I think some said that even on those cases where he knew he did not have the majority, he was able to influence the tone and the content of the majority's opinions.
He was, and he was a great trader. He was a great trader of votes. He orchestrated consensus and knew when to give it, and that balance over his time. You know, had its controversy, but also had its function. And right now, it's not functioning.
So let's go to the second abortion case that comes, or not the second contraception case that comes up. Also, a similar topic. This is the one where the court has consolidated a number of cases. Really, it flows some from the Hobby Lobby case, which was a corporation that had a religious ownership that said they did not want to be forced to provide insurance that provided contraception or abortion under the insurance. And the Supreme Court said that they were right. They gave them, I guess, some free speech issues. There's compelled, they mixed a little bit of free speech, a little bit of freedom of religion, and they came up with the conclusion that by law you couldn't require the corporation to do this, that the government had to come up with another way to provide it. They did. And now it's back.
Yeah.
Is that a fair way to kind of bring it up?
Yeah. This is an Obamacare case that is about religious freedom. And certain religious organizations don't want to be compelled to provide insurance that they object to. And that insurance has to do with contraception.
Little Sisters of the Poor, no less.
Yeah, exactly. So they picked a great plaintiff.
Yeah. Funny how that happens, isn't it? Just a coincidence in American society, how just the right plaintiff always seems to materialize.
And so this is a case where they also do not want to, not only they don't want to be compelled, but they don't want to even file what the government came back and said under Obamacare is they can just file a piece of paper that says, I object, and then there's an alternative way that the insurance will be provided to their employees.
Precisely, and I'll describe it as soon as you get back.
Very good. Don't go away. We're going to come back to the issue of the Supreme Court and the possible 4-4 cases. You're listening to Wagner and Winnick on the Law, also on the Biz Talk Radio Network.
For decades, the students at Monterey College of Law have graduated and gone on to pass the bar and become successful attorneys. However, not everyone goes to Monterey College of Law to become an attorney. I'm Wendy Law Revere, Dean of Admissions at Monterey College of Law. We also offer students our two-year Master of Legal Studies degree, which can enhance their chosen careers, like Monterey College of Law graduate Paul Bieber.
I was working as a deputy coroner for San Mateo County as a death scene investigator, and I wanted a better idea of the legal issues that were involved in forensic investigations. Everything about Monterey College of Law was accommodating to the course of study I was trying to find. I graduated from Monterey College of Law with no outstanding debt. I'm working as an investigator for the San Mateo County Private Defender's Office, performing indigent defense investigations.
For more information, call us today at 582-4000. That's 582-4000. Or visit us online at montereylaw.edu. That's montereylaw.edu. Making a change in career is a serious decision that affects both you and your family. You have many questions that need to be answered before you can make a commitment. I'm Wendy Law Revere, Dean of Admissions at Monterey College of Law. Have you ever dreamed of being a lawyer? We at Monterey College of Law can help make that dream come true. And it's affordable. But don't take it from me. Hear what recent graduate Dan Cullum says.
Before I was entered law school, I was an airline pilot. After I retired, I decided that I would go to law school. Monterey College of Law was the avenue to fulfill that desire. I love Monterey College of Law. It was small classes. The professors were very helpful, personal. You could talk to them. Tuition is not exorbitant at Monterey College of Law, which is the opposite of the way it is at other places. It's affordable. They have a program at Monterey College of Law that lets you pay as you go, so it's financially possible.
There's never been a better time to become a lawyer. Call us today at 582-4000 or visit us online at montereylaw.edu.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing. Our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation
at 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723.
We'll come pick a car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car. Running or not, the value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723, 800-721-6723. That's 800-721-6723.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide. ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
Biz Talk Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Wagner and Winnick on the Law. As I've said, you can also hear us on biztalkradio.com. We're on the BizTalk Radio Network. You're listening to Michael Cohen, who's our guest this week, talking about constitutional law. He's a constitutional law professor, and law professor Stephen Wagner and I are helping him walk through these issues that are couldn't be more timely. Because, Michael, you know, a lot of times we think about constitutional law as being pretty arcane and distant, but it has been in the news all this week. It's front and center. How exciting is it to be a constitutional law professor?
Oh, this is the greatest time of the year. Well, one of three greatest times of the year to be a constitutional law professor. But one thing a lot of people may not understand, and it may just be coincidence, but to us constitutional scholars, it's not. This is the time of year, right before summer, where the judges will soon stop hearing oral arguments and just start issuing decisions. But they save, typically, a lot of the hottest oral arguments for this season, for this late spring, before they stop, you know, the last oral arguments of the season. And it's just very ironic that Scalia died before you got to the hotbed cases.
So in some cases, they strategize when they're going to make the decisions and release them. In this case, an unexpected thing happened, and it changed the tone of the entire term.
It's changed the tone of the whole term. And this case that you were talking about before the great break, Mitch, is a great case in point. The religious organization, the opt-out for religious organizations from Obamacare is as simple as the piece of paper you described.
You know, Michael, and that's the other thing I'd add to that, and I appreciate your mentioning this in the beginning, Michael, is the idea of the interest group,
right,
and the lobbying factor. I mean, this is a great example, and I think Mitch hit it too by saying what an impact Little Sisters of the Poor could have.
Right, yeah.
So here's a case where we just talked about the Texas abortion case, that if it goes to a 4-4, it goes back to the appellate division, and that decision was that the law gets struck down. The law gets upheld, and these abortion clinics will indeed stay closed, and additional ones will close. In this case, Michael, what happens with the 4-4?
I think the 4-4 in this case would present a problem for the opt-out. I think the Little Sisters of the Poor get a voice. There has to be some alternative for right. the opt-out
so
procedure.
It would uphold the opt-out.
Correct.
Because the federal appellate courts, although there have been several differences, but the majority of them have held that the opt-out is okay.
Right. I mean, signaling a victory for the Obama administration.
It would be another Obamacare victory.
Yeah.
Which is not exactly what those who brought this case up. And it's probably worthwhile talking a little about the nuance here, because it really isn't just a vote about religious freedom. They're really talking about what standards a law must have in order to be upheld. So this is the case we talked about, the least restrictive means. So when they last talked about religion and the government restricting religion, or which is always, I find, kind of interesting, because the Constitution says it shall make no law in favor of religion, and yet we're arguing about laws that restrict religion. But I guess the fair statement is the Constitution has been interpreted to say it cuts both ways, right? Yeah. They're arguing it restricts their religious rights to be against this. Strict scrutiny, highest standard, that if the government's going to do something that impacts religion, there has to be no other lesser mean, right? And I think you told me during the break, what was one of the statements that along the way was said? That
Justice Kennedy, during argument, basically asked counsel for defending Obamacare, that he said, isn't the government hijacking the religious organization's insurance? And he really seems to have an issue with that. And to your point about the least restrictive alternative available, Mitch, the court issued a very unusual order last week asking for additional briefings on the issue of whether or not there isn't some additional alternative to the opt-out. For example, an opt-out, and the court went to this length, for example, an opt-out where the government does not negotiate with the insurers on the behalf of the religious organization, but in fact represents individuals in their ability to obtain contraception coverage if needed.
So interestingly enough, we're talking here about abortion rights and contraception, but there's a piece of this that just straight out corporate law, isn't it? Because these religious organizations are choosing to organize, in many cases for tax benefit reasons.
They get tax exemptions.
They're organizing under corporate law, right. And now under corporate law they have to provide insurance. And so they want the tax benefit as a nonprofit, but they don't want the burden of the corporate law. Is that an overstatement?
That's not. And, just to put the bucket in its context, churches and places of worship, mosques, synagogues, are completely exempt from this requirement. Right. This relates to religious organizations that are non-places of worship. So it does
get very intriguing here because it's constitutional law. It's got free amendment rights. It's got right of association. It's got religion. It's got the constitutional law. It has corporate law.
It has corporate law, which is a creature of state. There are benefits that come with corporate formation in states.
So we only have.
How do the justices decide whether to call for additional briefing?
They have to decide collectively. That it would be worth it.
Because it's extra work for everybody.
Right.
Yeah, I always wondered about that because, obviously in state court, if the judge calls for briefing, you go to the wood shop and you start working on it.
Right on, brother.
Well, we're just about out of time. Michael, just a couple of – what other – do we expect there to be some other cases? We've only talked about a couple of them because each of these are just huge issues, but – what else is going to come up this term that we might keep an eye on?
Yeah, the Fisher case is still out there. That's the race-based admissions policy in Texas. And what's really interesting about that is there is actually an odd number of justices to decide it. Although Justice Scalia passed, Justice Kagan is recused. So that'll get decided.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that, and we'll probably bring that back as a topic when it gets closer to it. Well, you've been listening to Wagner and Winnick on the Law. Today's topic has been the U.S. Supreme Court and the issues related to having a 4-4 number of or 8 justices that divide 4-4. As always, if you'd like to hear a repeat of today's program, go to wagnerandwinnick.com or biztalkradio.com. Until next week, if you don't know the law, know a lawyer.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or service. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. Biz Talk Radio.